Good morning, family. And I don't know if any of you saw the post that went out on social media about our series over these next few weeks. And it was actually announcing a next week. And I don't know if any of you, I know that a couple of you at least confused the dates, and you were expecting Pastor Roland here this morning to preach on racism. And that's actually next week. So if you're disappointed, I'm sorry. Forgive me. But it's next week, so that's exciting, something to look forward to. So the date was right on the graphic. It was just because it was put out. You know, sometimes when you see it, you just expect it right away, and we're not used to waiting. So this morning, you get me. So you get what you get, and you don't throw a fit. It is what it is. So we are doing this series on We Talk About That. So things that we maybe normally wouldn't talk about, that aren't comfortable to talk about in general, in church, in society, wherever, we're going to talk about them. And because of this, it might get a little uncomfortable from time to time over these next few weeks. And what I'm asking is that we would embrace that as family, knowing that you are in a safe place. And I am in a safe place. So as uncomfortable as you might feel this morning hearing and listening to this message, it would be equally uncomfortable for me to have to deliver it. So we are all in it together. And we can take advantage of being family and being in safety and get these topics out there so that we can move towards wholeness and healing in Jesus' name. Amen. So that's the heart behind this series and behind what I'm going to talk about this morning, which it might get a little heavy in the room, but I'm asking you to come with me on it. And the deal is, see, as we embrace pain and process, it's uncomfortable, especially with people. But the catch 22 is it's really hard to find healing in isolation. So if you isolate, you might necessarily not find that healing, but then when you come into family and you feel exposed, you feel uncomfortable, and then you kind of want to hide from the healing, knowing that it's a painful process to get there. However, we will get there together. And we love you too much to just leave you where you are and say, just tough it out. Don't talk about it. Just hide in a corner and let's all just rah, rah, rah. That's not the heart behind this family or the heart of the Lord. So that's where we are this morning. If you've ever listened to Stephanie Gretzinger's new album, Blackout, there's a line in there that she says, you can't turn out a light shining from the inside. And that there's so much truth behind that. But as I was thinking about that line, the problem is so many of us have insides that are so broken that light is just not coming out as effectively as it could and should. So we need to go inside of ourselves and get that healing that the Father wants to put on us this morning, so that we can shine bright and we can break the container that we're in and let that love flow. I am not a counselor, so I am not suggesting this morning that I have all the answers to your questions of what we're going to talk about. But the Father's here and Holy Spirit, I believe, will speak in and through. And He is the counselor. Come on. He is the counselor. So the topic that we're going to handle this morning is, sorry, I'm just scanning to see just the ages in the room. We're going to talk about sexual misconduct, sexual abuse, things like that. And sexual misconduct is prevalent in our society and in the church. And it's one of those things that many times there's cover-ups done and there's secrets kept in order to protect people so that they don't feel the vulnerability and the exposure that can come along with that. We want to keep things on the down low if we've been affected by it because we fear what it's going to make us look like. And we don't want to be that person. I don't want to have that story. I don't want to tell that. So because of that, we isolate ourselves. We mask, which it's fine, I'm fine, it's all good, I'm over it, and we move on. We say and do things to convince ourselves, but yet the wounds inside of us haven't yet healed, because all we did was put layer upon layer upon layer upon wall around it to just make it go away. It just never goes away. There's some statistics having to do with sexual abuse or misconduct or assault in the United States. It says 1 in 5 women and 1 in 71 men will be raped at some point in their lives. In the U.S., 1 in 3 women and 1 in 6 men experience some form of contact sexual violence in their life. Child sexual abuse is likely the most prevalent health problem children face, with the most serious of consequences. About 1 in 10 children will be sexually abused before their 18th birthday. That's 1 in 7 girls and 1 in 25 boys. This year, there will be about 400,000 babies, this is hard to hear, born in the U.S. that will become victims of child sexual abuse unless something is done to stop it. In 2006, a lady by the name of Tarana Burke, who was a social activist and community organizer, began using this phrase, Me Too, on a very old social media website called MySpace. And as part of a grassroots campaign to promote empowerment through empathy among women of color who have experienced sexual abuse, specifically in underprivileged communities. And then you fast forward to last year in 2017, actress Alyssa Milano began encouraging the spreading of this hashtag, MeToo, on social media platforms. Basically to say, if you have been impacted by sexual abuse, MeToo. It's putting it out there that we're in this together and you're not alone. Me Too was tweeted by Milano around noon on October 15th and been used more than 200,000 times by the end of the day by other people. Tweeted more than 500,000 times by the next day. On Facebook, that hashtag alone was used by more than 4.7 million people in 12 million posts in the first 24 hours. This is huge. Tens of thousands of people replied to her with their Me Too stories, and a lot were celebrities. Some of you may have participated in the campaign. Some of you know what I'm talking about. See, if you are a statistic, you're not just a statistic. You are dearly loved and dearly embraced by the Father this morning, and that is the agenda here today, for you to feel the love, for you to get the wholeness, and for you to move past into freedom, so that you can break the container, like Landon was talking about, and be hope for someone else. My question this morning is, can we as a family be brave enough to share our stories? Can we as people who have been victimized by this, have been affected by this, stand in our weakness and stand in the strength of the Lord, saying, yeah, me too. I've been there, but by the grace of God, I'm coming out, and by the power of God, I'm receiving healing and wholeness, and I want to be hope for you too. Can we do that? I'm going to ask a friend of mine to come join me on the stage right now, who's going to share just a little bit of her story in order to bring hope to some of you. Kaylee, would you come? Kaylee, as you saw last week, is a beautiful little baby girl in the back being held by daddy right now. And her name is Adeline. She was dedicated to the Lord last week. If you're here, it was awesome. And Kaylee's a friend of mine who has been victimized by sexual abuse. And she's just going to share just a minute, and then we're going to talk about it a little bit.
Okay, so as a young girl, I was actually sexually abused by somebody in my family, somebody that I had close contact with on a day-to-day basis.
So this was when you were just a child, correct? Yeah. And Kaylee, why don't you share a little bit about, okay, so that happened a long time ago, and at what point in your life did you kind of start dealing with this?
It actually, I wasn't a Christian at this point. I didn't become a Christian until, like, I was a young adult. But actually, it was around 4 years ago while I was in Africa on a missions trip. And I was there for 3 months. And in my own, like, prayer time, I felt like God was kind of putting his finger on some things. And at first, I didn't really want to accept it because up until that point, I hadn't told anyone. And so I was really just fighting with God in my own time, and I was just like, no, like, I'm not. Because I knew enough, I was a young Christian at that point, but I knew enough, if he was going to touch something, then I would probably have to tell somebody. And so I was like, I don't know about this. And so after a little while, I was still in Africa at the time, somebody actually preached on this topic and had an altar call, and I actually like ran away. I like left the meeting and I like ran back to my room, and it was in that time where God really started like the healing process in me. And it was in that moment where I decided that I was going to pursue freedom no matter what it took.
Okay, so what does that look like, pursuing freedom when you've been impacted by this? There's some deep feelings that you feel as you come forward and into that light or that exposure where you once hidden. Could you just explain just some of the feelings that you had to really move beyond in order to get your freedom?
Okay, for me, I mean, there was a lot of emotions and a lot of different layers of these emotions, but the two that really I had a hard time really giving up to God was shame and guilt. Those are the two big ones for me. And it just seemed like I would scratch the surface on something, and then God kind of like revealed something else to me, and I'm like, okay. So for me, it was just like when I walked into a room, I felt like everyone knew what I was going through. I felt like everyone saw what happened when I was a young girl. And yeah, that was really hard.
So where are you right now in it?
I'm great. Honestly, when Renee asked me to share a little bit about this, I actually said to Joel, I was like, it's so weird because this doesn't even feel like my story. Like, it doesn't even feel like it's a part of me anymore. You know, I've talked openly about it multiple times, shared my testimony and stuff like that. And the picture that kind of goes through my mind is, it's like I walked through the fire, but now I have no smell or anything on me.
Thank you. Come on. You're so far and so free from the fire that you no longer smell like smoke. Come on. I'm just going to move these out of my way. In the Bible, there's a story about a boy named Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth. It's a hard word to say, and honestly, I hadn't in my life had too much trouble saying it until this week, and I'm like, I can't say it anymore. This is really terrible. Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth has a story that somewhat relates to what we're talking about. It doesn't have to do with sexual misconduct, but it has to do with a deep wound in his life, and that's why we're going to go there this morning. He experienced a trauma in his life, like many of us maybe has, and then he had to walk that out. Mephibosheth was the son of Jonathan, was the son of King Saul. Mephibosheth was in a line of great riches, and he literally had everything at his fingertips. He was being cared for by a nurse. This nurse was like a modern live-in nanny. She did everything for him, and she had been put in charge of this young Mephibosheth's life to make sure he was safe, he was fed, he was protected, he was played with, he did all the little things that little boys do. But in the midst of Mephibosheth's young life, devastation hit their family. And they received news in the kingdom that his dad and his grandfather were both killed in the line of war. And then they also received news that at this point in time, the armies were coming to raid the kingdom. And they were going to take out everyone and everything that was in that castle. The nanny heard of the news, and in her haste and in her efforts to just grab Mephibosheth, he's 5 years old, and get out of there, she scooped him up and dropped him. When she dropped him, in that moment, he was suddenly crippled in both feet. In a moment, Mephibosheth's life changed. One moment. He didn't self-impose this. This happened to him. A five-year-old with his perfect little life could do anything he wanted, suddenly lost his dad, his grandfather, and the ability to walk, all within hours. 2 Samuel 4, just verse 4 says, it so happened that Saul's son Jonathan had a son who was maimed in both feet. Because when he was 5 years old, the reports came. His nurse picked him up, ran. In her hurry, she dropped him. Can you imagine the trauma of a little boy who jumps, who skips, who plays, who does all the things that little boys like to do, suddenly can't do any of those things anymore? There was no modern day technology that could help him get along a little bit better. There was none of that. In fact, most, if not all, people of that day that had no ability to walk became beggars. Can you imagine Mephibosheth having to go from the castle to the streets just to get food? This was huge in his life. This was done to him. And as I said, I know that this isn't the same as sexual abuse or being victimized by sexual abuse. It's different, but it lines in the fact that he had no control over it. And those that have been victimized by sexual abuse, sometimes there's just no control there. And it's something that's been done to you, whether it's continual slander against you in a sexual way, whether it's touch, whether it's rape, there's all kinds of categories that can fit into. But it's something that is done, imposed on you, and in a moment your life changed. In a moment you have to walk that out forever. In a moment, things look different to you. Some people that are affected by this are well aware of their emotions. They are processing their pain. They remember the incident. And then there might be some of you that it's so far buried that you're not even sure if it was you. Like, did I make that up? Because there are layers emotionally that we put on top of our pain to try and forget them. And we can push it down in deep recesses in us to the point where we literally just black it out. And sometimes years and years down the road, it will pop back up. And it's like this sudden flashback or memory, and now you're forced to deal with it. So some of you, if you can relate this, you might be well aware of your pain, but others of you might be like, I don't know. I mean, I'm feeling a little something here this morning, but I'm not sure. We can't leave it buried. So you're like, well, how do I know if it's still an issue to work through? How do I know? There's a few questions you can ask yourself. One question is, can I recall every detail of a painful event? If you do remember the event, you're like, well, and I'm just wondering if I'm over it yet or if I still need to walk through healing. If you can recall details of an event, do I still have the same raw emotions that I did in the moment when I think about it? Does those emotions come back? When I think or I see the person or the people that may have impacted me in this way, do I instantly recall the event and experience the emotions? Do I feel uncomfortable or upset when I come in contact with them? And what about my current relationships? Do they suffer? Because even if you don't remember the incident, there's a very good chance your current relationships may suffer because of something that happened to you in your past. So if you can answer yes to any, even just one of these, there may be something unresolved in your life that the Father wants to bring you to healing through this morning. There's hope. There's hope. There's hope. I was talking to a seasoned lady. This was probably about a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago. And she told me about an incident that happened in her life when she was a teenager and how she was sexually assaulted. She was now much, much, you know, further along in her life, and she had never told one soul, not one soul. This happened when she was a teenager, and she bottled it and buried it, living in a Christian community, thinking like back then, like this is not something we talk about at all, and now it's, you know, 40 years later, and it's coming to the surface in her life because she said, I never dealt with it. And then she began to worry, how has this affected my children? How has this affected my marriage? How has this affected my family and my friends? All these years, I buried this thing only for it to resurface later in life and in ministry when I'm out doing all these things for all these years, and now here am I having to deal with this thing. Well, she hopped on a plane and she flew far away to go to meet her abuser to say, I forgive you. Come on. The power of the presence of God and forgiveness and hope that we have today in the midst of our pain. Forgiveness is not just an option, it's a necessity. So the story of Mephibosheth continues in the book of Samuel. David becomes king, and in time, you know, he defeats all the enemy, and he's the reigning king, he's victorious. And one day, David's going through the kingdom, and he's thinking about Saul, and he's thinking about his friend Jonathan that's with him no more. And he's thinking, is there anyone left of Saul's family that I could show kindness to, that I could show honor to? I feel like I would like to do that. I feel like I would like to find someone. So he says it out there. He puts it out there. And there's a servant from Saul's household named Ziba. And they called him into David's presence. And the king says, are you Ziba? He says, yes, I am. He's like, is there anyone left from the family of Saul that I could show kindness to, that I could show honor to? I really feel like I'd like to do that. Well, Ziba doesn't hesitate. Ziba's like, well, you know, let me check with the guys. I don't know. Like, no. He's like, yeah, Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth. That, him. He's left. He's there. He's the one. He's like, Mephibosheth, okay. It's Jonathan's son. He's crippled in both of his feet. Well, where is he? Well, he's living in Lodabar. David didn't waste a minute. He called for him. He called him up from Lodabar. Mephibosheth shows up. He says, Mephibosheth? He says, yes, sir. He says, don't be frightened. I would like to do something very special for you in the memory of your father, Jonathan. To begin with, I'm returning all your properties from your grandfather Saul. And from now on, you'll take all your meals at my table. David called in Ziba, which was Saul's right-hand man back in the day, and said, everything that belonged to Saul and his family, I've handed to your master's grandson. You and your servants will work his land. You will bring in the produce and provisions for him. From now on, he will take his meal at my table. So Ziba followed out all the orders that King David had stated. The current king, David, was looking to show kindness to someone from the house of Saul. You see, no matter what has happened in your life, God has not forgotten you. No matter what pain that you have gone through in this area or in another area, God has not forgotten you. You are not alone. And I feel like the King of Kings, is here this morning, and he's looking to show kindness on someone in this room today. He's looking to show favor on someone who's been isolated, who's been pushing down, who's been living in Lodabar for far too long because of a trauma and just a catastrophe that's happened. If the Father, if the King truly is here to show kindness and favor to someone, I would volunteer for that. Because if he's looking to show kindness, why not you? If he's looking to show favor, why not me? Why not you? Why not me this morning? In the midst of my pain, in the midst of my weakness, in the midst of my fear and my isolation, why not be called out into the King's presence? Ziba, without hesitation, said, yeah, Mephibosheth, he's the one. Do you know what this tells me? Mephibosheth was on Ziba's mind. If you're not on someone's mind, your name is not the first thing that's going to come when the question's asked. But if they've been thinking about you and worrying about you and wondering about you and concerned about you, then when there's a question like that asked, your name will be the first one on their mind, the first one out of their lips. So this tells me that Ziba had been thinking and praying and loving and caring about Mephibosheth his whole life. While he was down in Lodabar, crippled in both feet, couldn't do anything, left the castle, lost his family, he was on Ziba's mind. And I'm telling you today, if you're here in this room and you need hope and you need healing and you've been in isolation, you have been on someone's mind. I believe this morning that there's been people that has been putting your name before the King, who's been praying for you, who's been contending for you, who's been hoping for you and believing for you, because they know that the King is looking to show kindness on someone today. Why not you? You're on someone's mind. You're not alone in your pain. Your name is being brought before the King. You thought you were alone. You thought no one cared. You're like, I haven't told my story. I've been living in isolation. I've buried it. No one knows it. But someone has been bringing your name before the King. You ever get a message and someone said, hey, I mean, I don't know what this is about, but you've been on my mind today. I've been praying for you. Have you ever been thinking about someone like all day long, just randomly, and you're like, I think I'll just pray for them. You've been on someone's mind. You've been on my mind. Second Samuel 9:4, where is he? He's living in Lodabar. Lodabar means no pasture. Pasture would mean like habitation or abode. So Lodabar was a place of no rest, of no pasture, of no food, of no hope. This was speaking of a place of of nothingness, of without the habitation of the presence of God, a place of constant torment, a place of trouble. And this is where Mephibosheth has been since this tragedy in his life. He's been living down in Lodabar with no hope, with no pasture, with no habitation of the presence of God, in constant torment and trouble. Down in Lodabar, crippled in both feet, having been broken by the actions of another person. No rest in his life. Maybe couldn't get over it. I just can't get over this thing that's done to me. It's literally my life ended in a moment. I don't even remember what it was like before that. You see, it's so easy once we've been hit by a trauma in our lives to just continue to spiral down. To no rest, to no hope, to no peace. And we can get stuck down in a place of no habitation, down in Lodabar, because it's just where it feels at least somewhat safe, because I'm alone. But we're hurting and we have pain. If you feel like you're in that place this morning, I believe that you're being called out. I believe that the Father is asking, who is it? Who can come out of this place of no rest? Who can come out of this place of no pasture? Who can I show kindness to and healing to and wholeness to, hope to this morning? You don't have to stay there. You can. But you don't have to stay there. Mephibosheth didn't have to stay there anymore, but he could have. He didn't have to respond to the king. We don't have to respond to the king. Mephibosheth knew, okay, if I come out of Lodabar, this is my comfort. This is my security right now. Yeah, it's been brutal. I don't really like it, but it is all I know. If I come out, that's going to be painful. That's going to be awkward. People are going to know. He didn't have to respond to the king, but he let them take him into the presence. And the first thing David said to Mephibosheth is, do not fear. I'm about to show kindness to you. That word kindness also means favor. And then the first thing, if you look in that verse, that he says he gives Mephibosheth is an inheritance. See, the first thing that the father wants to give, that the king wants to give when he brings us out of these places of isolation, it brings us out of these places of pain, he says, I want to give you the inheritance that belongs to you. I'm going to return, in the scripture it says, all the properties of your grandfather Saul. What's the next thing? The next thing David gives to Mephibosheth is a place. He says, furthermore, you will now eat all your meals at my table. He gave him a place. Mephibosheth didn't have a place. He had no place. He had no family. He was alone and isolated because his family died, and then his nurse dropped him, and he was crippled, and he was in Lodabar, and he had nobody, and he had nothing. And he's like, I'm going to give you a place. You are going to belong from now on. You are not alone anymore. He gave him a place at the table. So what is the table of the Lord? The table of the Lord, as represented as communion for us that we celebrate, represents everything that we have access to as believers and everything that we need. Healing, hope, freedom, love, joy, kindness, blessing, provision. It's literally represented by the table of the Lord. Because when Jesus died, he took on all the bad things and he replaced them with all the good things so we can have access to everything that we need in every moment and every day that we need it. See, the kingdom of God is the only place you can have your cake and eat it too. The third thing that the king gave Mephibosheth was a family. 2 Samuel 4:11 says, and Mephibosheth ate at David's table just like one of the royal family. In another translation, it says, as one of David's sons. An inheritance, a place to belong, and a family to be a part of. Come on. Mephibosheth was offered a seat at the king's table. But see, the thing is, he was still crippled in both of his feet. So to get there, I don't know if he had any ability to walk, or if he just kind of hobbled along. If he was fully crippled and had to crawl, or if he just kind of hobbled along like this. Or if someone carried him, but I imagine it would have been very embarrassing to get to the table that day. They're like, hey, Mephibosheth, come on over. Say, we have your seat at the table. And he's like, I'm trying. I'm trying to get there. But this is so awkward because no one has ever seen me before. No one even knows who I am. They're like, who's that guy? Who's that guy? Why? Wow. And Mephibosheth is thinking, man, they know everything about me. I'm so ashamed of who I am right now. I have so much pain. This is not security for me anymore. I'm now open and I'm vulnerable. I'm not isolated anymore, but man, this is brutal. And he crawls his way to the table and he pulls himself up there. And in that moment, he realized something. Can't see my brokenness. Can't see my brokenness anymore. When I'm seated at the table of the Lord, no, you can't see my brokenness anymore. When I'm seated at the table of the Lord. He realized that the table covered his brokenness. And when he was at the table of the Lord, he looked the same as everyone else in the family. Because the table is everything you need. And what was done on the cross is everything you need for your freedom, for your healing, for the release of your pain, for your hope. And that the cool thing is, Jesus doesn't just cover and hide the brokenness, but he heals it in his name by the power of the cross. So you can get up from the table and you can break the container and you can release the love and peace and joy and freedom that everybody else needs to. Yes. You were never intended to be on your own in your pain, but you were intended to be brought in. To inheritance, to a place, to a family. That's where your healing starts. And that's where your freedom comes from. I'm going to ask the worship team if you would come. This morning, the Father just wants us to be free. He just wants us to move beyond the pain that has maybe crippled us for years. Or he just wants to love you and for you and I to allow him to love us. What Pastor Barry talked about so good this morning about just making more room in us for him. But in order to do that, we have to be okay with coming out into the light and releasing the pain in our lives and our hearts so that we can make more room so that he can have it all. Kaylee nailed it this morning when she talked about those feelings of shame and guilt. When you guys are ready, you can just go ahead and begin to worship. If you have been impacted by sexual misconduct or abuse in any way, whether it's contact or even just constant verbal slander over you in a sexual way, you know that shame and guilt just eats at your life. The guilt you feel because you feel like maybe you did something wrong to cause it. Or the shame you feel. Shame is when when you feel bad about who you are. Like, you literally take it on. You're like, that's who I am now. Guilt is something that you've done. Shame is what you are. So when you feel that shame, like, oh, like everyone can see everything. When you walk into a room and you feel the need to put on sunglasses or a hat pulled down and keep the lights dim, there's a good chance you're dealing with shame. You don't need to deal with shame. Jesus took it. He took it. He took it all so that we can have freedom, so that we can be brave, so that we can go on to be people who deliver the freedom, the joy, the peace to people in this room and people outside this room. Shame will destroy you. The enemy will destroy you in this area. He'll tell you that is who you are. He'll tell you you did cause this. But Jesus will bring you life and freedom. Shame will not be tolerated. I experienced so many emotions in worship this morning. I don't know if you did too. I went from crying to laughing to like I'm going for it in the spirit. It was like all over the place. But I feel like that's what the Father was doing. He was doing so many things. He was fighting our battles. He was loving on us. He was releasing joy and freedom in this house, in you, in me. And He's not done yet. Because if you came in with something, I don't want you to leave with it. I don't want you to leave with it this morning. You don't have to. You can respond to the King. If you're in Lodabar, you can respond. You don't have to respond, but you should respond. Because there's so much freedom and so much joy on the other side of this process. Will the process be hard? Yeah, it'll be hard. Man, do hard things. It's worth it. It's worth it.